This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
8 Jaguars, 4 weeks. Yamava Resort and Casino at San Manuel is giving away 2 Jaguars every Thursday starting January 8th. Club Serrano members, play to earn entries for your chance to win a new luxury crossover SUV. Join for free today and don't miss your chance to drive off in a Jaguar. More cars, more chances to win. Only at Yamava Resort and Casino, celebrating its 40th anniversary. You in? Details at yamava.com. Must be 21 to enter. Please gamble responsibly.
An NBA contract, including Correct. A two-way contract. That's the rule. In the end, there is the bright line rule they are drawing is you can have played in the G League, you can have played professionally in Europe, you can have whatever. You just can't have signed an NBA contract. That's the rule. It is an interesting. I think hockey does it right because hockey, the way they do it in hockey is this, and maybe this is true in baseball too. No, I think you entered the draft in baseball. In hockey, here's what happens. If you become 18...
No, you're just draft eligible in baseball.
If you become 18 by a certain date in hockey, you are eligible for the draft. And that is true whether you're an international player, it's true whether you're an American player, it's true whether you declare for the draft or don't declare for the draft. You are eligible to be drafted. And so you're drafted. You can then go play in college, where you can be paid in the way you are in college. You can play professional leagues in Sweden or Finland.
Yep.
You can play in the junior leagues in Canada. You can play wherever you want. And you can even sign an NHL. You can even sign a, basically, can you sign a contract? I don't think you can sign a contract.
Who was the kid last year? Remember, he played at, I think, BU. And then
No,
they just have your rights. Understanding.
They have your rights, and then and they hold on to your rights for a period of years.
Now, right.
It's different. It is true. There is a difference between junior players and European players. How long you hold the rights for, college players, etc. But so what you'll often see is a player will play for Boston University or something, and they'll play in the bean pot, and then they'll play in the NCAAs and whatever. And then at the end of that year, when their college year ends, they'll join the Predators, whoever, and they'll sign a contract and they'll join the Predators. But you just hold their rights. And so there's not this distinction. And so the idea of this guy, are you offended by this guy, the fact that he was drafted? I don't care the fact that he was drafted. I'm more offended. The double standard to me that's more difficult is why should a professional player in Spain, a 28-year-old professional player in Spain, be allowed to come be a college student, whereby someone who plays, let's say you sign a two-way, not be allowed? Like, I don't understand why the professional player in Spain gets to play.
I'm with you. And I understand this is probably outdated because, let's be real, it's probably professional sports anyway.
That's the thing. It's professional in college anyway.
I still hold to the idea of you made the decision to turn professional. You therefore forfeit the right to play college basketball. And now you have to make that decision.
Of course, it is absolutely true, though, that college basketball is itself professional. Why are we having this when college basketball was amateur? And then it was like you decided to go pro and pay for money, so therefore you can't come play for nothing. But you're playing for money either way. Why draw any distinction?
My thing is you made a choice. You made a choice to go a certain path, and you've taking yourself out of that player pool.
You made a choice because we're telling you it's a choice. But what? Why are we saying it has to be a choice?
But you know the rules.
But we made the rules. Why are those the rules?
Simply because you have to, like, if you're going to have a sports league, you have to have some rules.
Right, but why does it make rules? Why is it bad to take money in Spain? Why should that be disqualifying you when from Alabama?
I think it should be. I think if you take money in Spain, you can't come play college basketball.
Why? Why is it worse taking? Why does taking money in Spain disqualify you from taking money in Alabama from Alabama?
Because you're signing up to play in a professional league. It is a different.
I know, but it's not different anymore. If you're making $1 million, literally the truth of the matter is the only reason the person from Spain or wherever wants to come to play college basketball is they're going to get paid more. They're going to be paid more to
Correct.
Play college basketball.
Correct.
Anyway, we'll take a break. Chris Harrington on the
in
other
studio.
Side. Oh, Chris is on studio and Sam Hardiman. We're going to have Sam Hardiman, who, by the way, was present for the Tennessee-Illinois game, and they were rooting for Illinois. They were on the right side of this. Plus, the Pats are good. We'll talk to Sam about all of that, plus what's happening in the city. It's the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
8 Jaguars, 4 weeks. Yamava Resort and Casino at San Manuel is giving away 2 Jaguars every Thursday starting January 8th. Club Serrano members, play to earn entries for your chance to win a new luxury crossover SUV. Join for free today and don't miss your chance to drive off in a Jaguar. More cars, more chances to win, only at Yamava Resort and Casino, celebrating its 40th anniversary. You in? Details at yamava.com. Must be 21 to enter. Please gamble responsibly.
Chris Hannon joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That's Valentine by The Replacements, lead singer, songwriter, Paul Westerberg, born on this day in 1959. The opening line of that song is, "Well, you wish upon a star that turns into a plane." And, Grizzlies fandom feels a little bit like that lately.
You know, that was mostly fun.
Oh, it was a great game. I mean, it would have been, you know, better as a Grizzlies fan if they win it. But that was the game of the year from just a quality of basketball, quality of experience standpoint. Definitely.
Yeah. Obviously, an ending you would have wished differently, but a tremendous performance from Ja, tremendous performance from your rookie, all on national TV, back and forth, a lot of fun. Let's just go dive into the issues. Drew wrote about at the Daily Memphian, and that people have been discussing,
And I've got a follow up column that I filed early this morning.
Go
that
up
should
in
be
a little
soon.
Bit. Okay, let's take the first one about who was sent out for the last 1.7 seconds left. They need a 3-pointer to tie. Cam Spencer was not on the court. Do you have any problem with that?
I got zero problem with this. Cam Spencer is the player. On the Grizzlies roster, Cam Spencer is the player I have the most faith in to make a 3-point shot. Uh-huh. He is not the player I have the most faith in to get a 3-point shot when there's 1.7 seconds on the clock. It's an inbounds play against an athletic set defense trying to stop you from getting a 3-point shot. You have to be able to get separation from a defender and get a clear look over a defender. And they got a really good look. In a situation where sometimes you just don't get a shot, they got a good look from a capable player and it didn't go down. The idea that Cam Spencer is going to get a clean look, I think is fairly unlikely in that situation.
By the way, You have to have Ja Morant on the floor. Should he be on the floor? If you just, if the point was just to get a...
No, I got no problem with that. They missed the shot. I got no problem with that final play.
Right. I was just wondering, theoretically, he's not a shooter. Like, would you want... literally, forget egos or whatever, who should be on or whatever. Like, wouldn't you want... If literally just the point was to get a three, wouldn't... And does Cam Spencer's presence at all make it easier for other players to get a shot?
Maybe, maybe, but it's 1.7 seconds. It is so easy to just not even complete the inbounds pass in that situation. They got an open look from a capable shooter. I just, you know, again, you got to think about, it's not just like, who do you want taking the three? You have to execute a play to get a shot. I think it was fine.
I'll get to the rotations here. Then the other thing was just switching off of leaving Edgecombe the open three.
I mean, obviously it didn't work out, so you would do it differently in retrospect. I think it's fair to say you should have done it differently on the front end. Again, basketball happens. I think that the things that led to that situation are more important than the thing itself. Was that the best defense? Maybe not, but like a guy hits a shot, you know?
Right. All right, the rotations. That's the other area of sort of focus and criticism.
Yeah, so I think it was a mistake when Isolo took out Morant and Coward at the 6:16 mark. Now you hope as a coach, like, you don't give up an 8-2 run immediately when that happens,
right?
But I marked it when it happened. It was funny in the media room, like, we walk in and someone said, not to anyone particular, just said to the room before Isolo got there, at what point, what was the timestamp when they went out? And I said 6:16, because I wrote it down. The second it happened, I marked it down, and I sighed and winced like everyone else in the building did. Like, oh, I hope this works out okay. And it didn't work out okay. And it's the kind of thing where, you know, playing the long game sort of costs you in the end, because you're trying to save these guys, you know, a couple of minutes, maybe partly for the rest freshness standpoint. But also, I think both guys were having their playing time monitored coming into the game for different reasons. And you try to save them a little bit, and you end up having to play them 5 minutes more in overtime and lose anyway. So you get the heavier workload in the loss. And it would have been better, I think, to play it through. There's no guarantee you win that game if you just play it through. I think when Isolo said, you know, that he, you know, his contention that Morant and Coward did benefit from the rest, it's possible to know, but it's a reasonable thing to say, because they were good when they came back in.
Right. That's the question.
But he also said, they benefited from the rest, but we didn't as a team. Right? And I think that's a fair assessment.
Well, Drew paraphrased the question here, but basically the way he paraphrased it was this more long-term concern, monitoring minutes, et cetera, minutes restrictions?
It was my question.
Of course, your question.
Yeah.
Or was it more in the moment they needed a blow?
Right. Which was it?
What do you think?
Because
He said both.
And this is the difference. One is a coaching tendency. Like, this is sort of a coaching philosophy thing of his with the short stints and the rest and the freshness. And the monitoring, the workload is organizational. That's an Isolo thing. I think it was both. I think his general pattern has been this, to like have some guys rest in the middle of the fourth quarter and then come back in a little bit later than most coaches would bring the guys in. That is a tendency. But also, and he talked about this before the Milwaukee game, like they are monitoring workload specifically for Ja Morant and Cedric Howard, Morant coming off the ankle thing. Coward, who had missed time at the Hill Soreness, and I think Coward just generally as a rookie who basically didn't play college basketball last season. This is I don't know what the secret sauce is, but there's some dial where basically like it goes into the red, then you have to play him less to get it back into the green. It's that kind of thing. So I think it was both. I think it did not work out for them in the moment. I that is one thing. I don't really mind the short stint thing generally. I do think I would like to see him go away from that more in tight fourth quarters. I would. I do think the potential benefit is not worth the potential cost, not just in that game, but generally. So I think that is. I mean, I agree with the criticism there. I think that was a bad decision that may have cost them the game. But I don't think that's the biggest thing in the game either.
I mean, the biggest thing in the game was the turnovers, right? Wasn't the biggest
thing in the game, like the fact that they took
111 shots to compared to 92.
Sure. But more specifically, you focus on the run that happens late because it's a close game.
Right.
First quarter, they start out 17-7. They start subbing. You got to sub at some point, but you start subbing and it all disappears.
Right.
Tie game at halftime. I don't remember the number. I think it's like 18-10, 18-11. You jump out to a good start. You build a lead again. You start subbing. It all disappears. The Grizzlies played bench players a 20-something more minutes total than the Sixers did in that game. And I think it's a two-part problem. A, playing the bench players more, but B, it's the bench players you had to use.
Right.
And if you look at, if you watch the way, what happened in the middle of the first and third quarters of those games, and to me, these were actually the most decisive stretches of the game. You had situations where the Grizzlies had lineups of three or more bench players. The Sixers still had their starters on the floor, and the athletic gap was yawning. The Grizzlies lineups they had out there could not hang defensively and athletically with the Sixers lineups. And that's not just because, well, you got bench players on the floor. It's the bench players you had to work with.
Right.
Think about the best defensive players, the most active defensive players the Grizzlies have on their roster who are not starting lineup players. It's Brandon Clark. It's Vince Williams. It's Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. It's even John Conchar. It's Scottie Pippen. All of those guys are in street clothes. And you're throwing out a second unit of Javon Small, who's a rookie who's like 6 feet tall, Cam Spencer, who is a non-athlete, essentially, Gigi Jackson, who is an athlete, but defensively,
kind of right?
Santi Aldama, one of your better players, but not a good defensive player, really. And then Jock Landale, who's a bad athlete and a bad defensive player, and you're putting multiple of those guys on the floor against Tyrese Maxey and VJ Edgecombe and Paul George and Joel Embiid. And, like, part of it is just he just didn't have the toolkit to work with. You can't play the starters all the time. But I think in that situation, if he had, like, mixed lineups a little bit more or pulled back on bench minutes a little bit more, maybe you find yourself in a situation where you're not costing yourself a game by taking Cedric Howard and John Morant out, you know, at the six-minute mark in the fourth quarter.
Well, that's a point that Jeffrey made earlier, which is that if you're putting Ty Jerome in for John Morant in that moment,
that's
it may be different than if you're putting Javon.
This is a good general point. The Isolo philosophy of roster usage is problematic when you have half your roster gone. It might be fine if you have your whole roster. Of course, they're never going to have their whole roster. But if you actually had this whole roster.
The Sixers didn't have their whole roster. They basically had their whole roster last night. They had a couple of. Yeah.
That was the most minutes Joel Embiid and Paul George have played all season. And so if you're doing a substitution pattern and a minutes distribution where, you know, you're throwing out a lineup in the middle of whatever quarter and it's Ty Jerome, Scottie Pippen, Brandon Clark.
Right.
Like, you might be fine. Like, it all might work fine. The problem is doing that in the context of the guys you have out. And it's those two things together that I think is the problem.
Well, it's interesting because part of the point is because of this, you should have a fuller roster. I would imagine part of the philosophy you should have a fuller roster because of this.
Yeah.
But are you saying, I mean, it's funny. One of the things, without having Edie and Ja and whatever, we just have a hard time seeing how it all works in terms of the lineups that are taken. What does this team?
You can envision it, but you haven't seen it in practice. Yeah.
So we're having a hard time getting answers. In a very different way, we're having a hard time getting answers to whether the Isolo philosophy works.
That's right. I mean, it is what it is. And he has adjusted. I mean, at times, maybe there are ways he needs to adjust a little bit more. Again, like, you lose a one-possession game. If a shot doesn't fall or does fall, then people aren't talking about any of this, and there's that part of it. At some point, they got to start getting some wins against decent teams, and that's just not happening. And this was one of the best opportunities they were going to have. Now, again, like, Joel Embiid's questionable before the game, right up to the moment. I went into Nick Nurse's thing. He's like, oh, the ankle's probably okay, but he's sick, and we don't know. And then dude comes out and plays 40 minutes or whatever, like, of MVP-level play. Like, really? This is the game you're going to do this? So there's that aspect of it. But at some point, like, they got to start. They're not going to get back to 500 without getting some wins against good teams, especially at home.
And they now have a difficult month coming up. They got 15 games this month, trip to Europe, like everything else. And it starts with the two games in L.A. It's a great game from Ja. Like, it wasn't Ja.
Yeah.
And honestly, he should have had more assists than he had. And he had 40 points. He was efficient. Of course, he made shots, which makes it look better.
Right.
Same shots they'd been missing other times. But he only took two threes.
Yeah, the two threes it's hard when you're this good. Like, you know, you can't be perfect. The two threes he took were bad shots.
Right.
Like, when he took them,
yes, they were.
They were sort of settle shots in the fourth quarter, and you got it going, and it's like and it's early in the clock, and like those were also plays where I sort of went. But again, like the guy was 16 of 22. He was 16 right. to 20 on 2-point shots. You know, 10 of 12 in the restricted area. He was great. The Morant thing's interesting. He's been back for 3 games, coming off the ankle injury, and it's been three. It's like three faces of Ja. The 3 games he's played have been 3 distinct types of games from him. But 2 of them have been really good.
Right.
And if you're going to get 2 out of 3, like that, you know, A, just be on the court, like, you know, that much would be great. But getting 2 good games out of 3, if that going forward, I think would do a lot for the team. And, you know, the Milwaukee game was more of a pure point guard.
Control the game.
Balance, playmaking, and scoring, control the game. Total. It was more of a total game. And then last night was like, I got it going. I'm going to go. And, like, that's fine, too, when you got it going. And so the fact that he could do either of those things, you know, that's what makes him really good. And now it's just a question of first staying on the floor, and then second, like getting those efforts, you know, more times than not.
Right. I mean, that felt like Ja is someone who is aware when they're playing the Sixers and Embiid on national TV. Right. You don't want to just get that effort. I mean, I don't know how much of it is just he played better and hit shots that he didn't. I don't know how much.
Well,
of
yeah, but I think he was just as good, if not right. better, in the Milwaukee game when he scored right. 17 points.
Yep.
And so, like, you know, I'm not saying, like, go get right. 40. I'm just saying be good,
right.
you know, in whatever way that manifests.
Coward was terrific.
Coward, man. Coward was so good.
That dunk over Embiid, the rebound dunk, was tremendous.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Coward was so good. That's the thing. A lot of this, there is so much promise. Like, there is so much promise. Coward has been unbelievable. Edie was tremendous.
I feel better when I think back to, like, start of season. I'm thinking post, you know, the Jerome Pippen injuries, which changed, you know, things. I feel better about the potential of this roster than I did at the start of the season.
Right.
But I probably feel worse about this roster reaching whatever its potential is. And that's the real tug of this season.
You can still absolutely. It's not even far-fetched to imagine a healthy plan.
It is all there. It is within sight, but so far to this point out of reach. And that is the terrible thing about it.
But it would require for us not to have a healthy roster come playing.
And we're not talking all 15. Like,
no.
can they get Zach Edey and like 2 of these other guys?
Right.
You know,
it would require something. Like, they're on track to have that. It would require another bad thing happening,
either
another injury or a setback that we right now don't expect, except for the fact that we've been trained to always expect.
That's 100% right. It is all there. It is all possible.
One of the points I made in the little piece I wrote today was, for the Memphis Tiger basketball and football teams, structurally, the world changing has changed in ways that does not benefit them at all. And it's
right.
going to make it much harder for them to be, certainly for the basketball team, what it once was in terms of national relevance. Structurally, I mean, there's no question that there are no particular structural impediments, institutional impediments, to the Grizzlies being as great as they. I mean, our best shot of having a local team doing national things is.
There are some speed bumps, but they're not. There's no wall for stopping you from moving ahead. Yeah. The most market size and revenue and all of that stuff does matter, but it's not the most important thing.
Right.
The most important thing in the NBA is good management. And I know people can, like, you know, not like this decision or that decision or whatever. This team has good management for the most part. I mean, they just found Cedric Howard with the 11th pick. They found Zach Edey with the whatever. Cam Spencer in the second round, Jalen Wells in the second, on and on and on. Like, they are a well-managed operation, and if you're a well-managed NBA team, no matter where you're at, you got a chance.
Right. And yes, the revenues matter, but honestly, there they only matter as much as you want them to matter, like, in the end.
I'm also factoring in attractiveness of market and all the other little stuff.
Yes,
all the stuff matters, but
it's free agency stuff.
It does not alone prevent you from doing anything, and it is not the most important thing to your success.
Right. Yeah. All right. There was good news, I guess, Joel Embiid. What, by the way, he can now not be on an NIL. He will not be eligible for an all-NBA team.
Talking about Jokic.
Jokic, I'm sorry. Yes, Jokic. That's ridiculous. I mean, in the end, they're going to have to get rid of this, right? It is a historic all-time season.
You could argue whether they should have set a number at all, but it's pretty clear they set the number too high if they're going to set it, given the reality of the season.
Right.
And so, yes, no, this will be the thing where they change it because of this outcome. Yes.
And then In terms of Grizzlies, I think are ninth now, a little bit ahead of Portland.
Yeah, but they've been ninth for a while. Right.
The Clippers have won five in a row. Are you now looking behind, looking over the shoulder at the Clippers?
I think you got to look both directions. Yeah, like nothing's guaranteed. I mean, if you're the Grizzlies, you would really like to at least move up one more spot and have a chance to like win a play-in game and not play the Thunder in the first round.
Right.
But yeah, nothing's guaranteed. That's just my point. They have to start getting wins. The only win they have, I mean, they beat Phoenix early. Phoenix at the time did not have a winning record. They do now. The only win they have this season against a team that had a winning record the day the game happened was at Minnesota. You know who didn't play in that game? Anthony Edwards. And so, like, we can, you know, given the injuries they've had, to be where they're at is fine. There's been so many positives and so many individual players. You can see if it fits if you put it together. But at some point, you got to start winning games, you know, that you're not necessarily supposed to win.
Your piece on what's happening in Memphis film is up. Song Sung Blue, I've not seen it yet, but will over this weekend, I think, at some point. It's doing fine, but you said should be a grower.
Well, that's what Variety basically says. So they quoted some consultant who, because it didn't. Box office stuff is contextual and you know, to be interpreted, right? It was like 7th or 8th or whatever, the box office, behind the other new movies that opened and then the big Avatar and Zootopia and all that. But given the context of its budget, which is fairly small, and given the kind of movie it is, it did okay. But the consultant makes the point that the people who went to see it liked it. The scores are very high from the people who went to see it. And they're particularly high in demographics, older women especially, demographics that don't necessarily rush out opening night to see a movie. They may wait, you know, old people like you who may wait, you know, the weekend too or whatever,
exactly right?
Right.
I'm it.
And so it could be a thing where like it has legs, so to speak.
I'm pretty much the old woman demographic too. Yeah. So Marty Supreme, you've seen, want to see again? You liked it?
Yeah, I saw it on a screener, you know, on my television. It was a time peg screener. I had to watch pretty quickly. So I really want to see that in a theater, which I haven't not gotten a chance to do. And I plan to go see that probably this weekend.
The Housemaid, you said you expected trashy fun and got trash.
I mean, you know, if we're doing consumer service here, like I'll acknowledge that there is some fleeting Sydney Sweeney nudity in this movie, and that's probably part of its box office appeal. But it is bad. It's like a Gone Girl thing. That's like way sub ripoffy. Like it's a bad movie. It's a bad movie that has qualities, but it's a bad movie.
The Plague. What's The Plague?
The Plague is really good. It's I'm surprised it's opening in multiple theaters this weekend. It's not just like opening at one. It's a new movie, first time filmmaker. It you know, played at Cannes Film Festival. It's an American movie, or at least an American filmmaker. It's in English language. Played at Cannes in the summer and then is up for some Independent Spirit Awards. So it's kind of a small movie, but it's really good. And it's the kind of thing that, you know, maybe not everyone wants to see, but like art can be about anything. Good art can be about anything. In this case, it's about a sleepaway camp for middle school water polo players. And it's all set within the social world of these middle school age boys and with, you know, social anxiety and bullying and sort of these topics sort of at play. But it's just a really, really well-made movie. The acting, the filmmaking, the whole shebang is really well done.
All right. If people are hanging out at home watching films on Netflix this weekend, Relay and Cover Up, both new to Netflix, do you recommend either?
Yeah, I like both. I loved Replay until like the last Relay. 20 minutes. And then, you know, all these movies have to have a twist now, which I wish people would just write straight screenplays. They don't have the aha, everything was different than what you thought it was kind of stuff. I didn't love the twist, but it's so good up to that point with its sort of action thriller plotting and beats. I really liked it. And then Cover Up is a documentary about Seymour Hersh, the investigative reporter, historic career. He contributed to the documentary. He's involved with it. Reluctantly, a lot of times there's a lot of like, I can't believe I agreed to do this. No, I'm not talking about my sources. No, don't put that in camera. There's a lot of that going on. It's a good watch. It's a really some essential, tough but essential history that people may or may not know, especially depending on your age, and really I think reverberates into the present day.
Chris, thanks very much. Happy New Year. We'll talk to you in the new year. Thanks very much. We're going to take a break. Sam Hardiman's going to join us. I think he's driving back from Nashville, where he watched Illinois defeat Tennessee in a walk-off win. We'll talk to Sam about what's happening in the city when we return. It's Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
8 Jaguars, 4 weeks. Yamava Resort and Casino at San Manuel is giving away 2 Jaguars every Thursday starting January 8th. Club Serrano members, play to earn entries for your chance to win a new luxury crossover SUV. Join for free today and don't miss your chance to drive off in a Jaguar. More cars, more chances to win, only at Yamava Resort and Casino, celebrating its 40th anniversary. You in? Details at yamava.com. Must be 21 to enter. Please gamble responsibly.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Sam Hardiman. He covers the city for the Daily Memphian. I believe he's on I-40 somewhere between Nashville and Memphis. Is this true, Sam?
Yes, sir. We're passing mile marker 93.4 as we speak.
So what town is that?
Like,
where are you?
We're approaching Jackson, the bustling metropolitan area that is.
I saw that Sophia, our colleague at the Daily Memphian, reported that there will not be a Bucky. You're not going to be able to stop at a Bucky's there in Fayette County in 2026, which we had expected. Are you a Bucky's aficionado fan?
I'm not an aficionado. I've enjoyed my time at the Bucky's. I've been to one in Texas. I've been to the one in Leeds, Alabama. I think their brisket sandwiches are very good. We have, as I don't know if your listeners are aware, we have several Bucky's stuffed animals in the office that I sometimes throw footballs at. I appreciate those. So
that's good.
I'm not anti-Bucky's. I'm not pro-Bucky's.
Right, okay.
I like it.
You are coming back from Nashville because you were present to watch Illinois win a walk-off bowl game against the Vols, and although you live in Tennessee and your wife lives in Tennessee, you guys were rooting for Illinois. Is this correct?
This is correct. There are familial reasons that we were rooting for Illinois. And yes, we were in the relatively robust Illinois section, mostly Vols fans in Nissan Stadium, which will soon be no more. In Nashville, but yeah, it was a really fun, lovely, great football weather, nice cold game, great walk-off winning kick that won me some money on the live over.
It was
a nice day.
How was the crowd? Because one of the things I was talking to David Boyd, our colleague at the Daily Memphian, about this, it's one thing if players opt out. If fans start opting out, and they have not, in terms of watching these games on TV, the ratings have been pretty good, and that's really why the games exist. People are like, why do we even play these anymore? Well, they play them because ESPN needs programming, and that's why we play them as much as anything. But we also play them because, like, cities like Memphis enjoy filling up hotel rooms and whatever. And so I'm curious if fans will keep – when players are opting out, will fans ultimately opt out? What was your experience there yesterday?
The stated crowd, they put it on the Jumbotron or whatever, was 50,687. And I would believe it, given the roar of the crowd, given looking around how many seats were full. I'd believe that. I think it was a big deal for the Illini faithful that Luke Altmyer, their outgoing quarterback, did not opt out.
Yeah.
Of the game, they had some other big opt-outs. But the fact that he played, I think, was pretty big for people traveling down there. And, you know, I think – think in general, I think it also is going to have to do with the state of the football program at any school, right?
Right.
Like, if you're in transition, if you're in flux, why do you care? But, you know, Brett Bielema's done a good job at Illinois, and it seems like, you know, the fan base really loves and cares about him. And,
right.
You know, I don't know how the Vols fans are feeling about Josh Heupel today. I got no clue.
I think that's right. It's why when your Memphis game, Memphis football is in total transition. Why? I think people feel pretty good about Memphis football, but there's no coach to feel loyal to, and then the players are opting out. I think it's a very different experience than what you got from Illinois. Okay, last thing on the world of sports. It appears that your Pats have a stranglehold now on the AFC East, and I just want to congratulate you, even as I use the word strangle, because Stephon Diggs accused of strangling.
I did read that article this morning. It seems like an unfortunate incident that he's allegedly accused of. Also, like, you know, you say, like, appear to have, like, Jeff, this isn't like
no, well, yeah, I just, I was trying to get in my stupid like, strangle pun to try to chip away and take some of the joy out of you winning the AFC East. Congratulations. They're AFC East champions, possible number one seed, wildly unexpected when the year began. It really is. That's a hell of a year for you.
Thank you, Jeff. I know you need it.
And it appears that Drake May is going to win MVP.
That's true, and that could be very profitable for me as well. And so I'm that could be really good. Yeah.
When did you place that wager?
October.
Really?
October. Yeah. Yes.
So you got good odds.
I did. Yeah, I got plus 600. So, yeah, not as good as they could have been. I have a friend who's sitting on plus 1600 right now. But, yeah, plus 600 is fine.
All right. Well, congratulations. Everything's coming up roses for y'all. Illinois wins. Drake May MVP. AFC East title.
And Steph Diggs is a felon, potentially.
Yeah, you know what? With all due respect, like, he's not going to miss any time. It was – did you read the story?
Oh, yeah.
So it's an allegedly a employee of his.
Chef.
A chef. This is all alleged. Said she hadn't been paid, was complaining about getting paid,
yep.
And he supposedly put her in a stranglehold.
Yeah.
That does not feel like the kind of thing. It's a kind of feel like they will wait for the justice system to play itself out.
It also seems like, in fairness, that's what they've been doing for almost
everyone. Yeah, that's what they do. They don't, yeah. I mean, Rashee Rice didn't.
Correct.
Until the, yeah. So that it's not going to interfere with the playoff. With all the respect, I mean, I hate to say it, this is what Pats fans care about. I presume. Isn't that what you care about, whether he's going to be eligible to play in the playoffs? Sam?
I'm not going to comment further on this incident.
Okay, that's probably just as well. The other good news in terms of things, everything coming up roses, is it looks like you've got another data center you're going to be able to cover here in 2026. Have a story at the Daily Memphian on a new data center that could be coming courtesy of XAI. What's that story?
Yeah, so yesterday, and we got to shout out the information, and Theo Wade, who's the reporter there, broke this story first yesterday. He's also a native Memphian. XAI purchased a giant warehouse, literally 100 yards from its existing second Memphis data center, which is in Memphis. But in this case, this warehouse that they purchased yesterday is in South Haven, Mississippi. And by right next to each other, I mean me with my measly throwing arm can stand in the parking lot of one and hit the other with a football.
Wow.
That's how close they are to one another. And so XAI has, and if people remember a year ago, XAI pledged that they were going to put up 1 million chips, semiconductor chips of compute in Memphis, Tennessee area. And so now, in order to do that, they have bought their third data center here in Memphis. And so, yeah, that's what's happening. They also, in December, that we reported yesterday, and no one else really noticed that much, they also bought another 105 acres worth of land next to the power plant that they have constructed in South Haven, Mississippi, which is about a mile south of the data center they purchased. So now they have another 105 acres left to play with beyond just another data center.
So here's the thing. I don't think air pays a lot of attention to state lines. This is not my area of expertise, but AIR would seem to not care if you're in Mississippi or in Memphis, Tennessee, or whatever else. What are the implications for? Well, do we know where the water and where the power is going to come from for these data centers?
We don't know the water. We have a very good guess, given what XAI has told the Mississippi Department of Environmental Quality, which we reported this summer at the Daily Memphian, and you can go check it out. We maybe even unlocked it for you today as we're running a little special, is that XAI is building what is going to be, and they have right now, temporary turbines, natural gas turbines that are running there, but long-term, they're planning about a gigawatt's worth of electricity at the former Duke plant at 2875 Stanton Road in South Haven. And so a lot of the power for this is likely going to be what is called behind the meter, which is this power plant, which means XAI is generating itself. It's not really relying on the grid. In the future, I would imagine there's going to be some interaction with the Tennessee Valley Authority and the Tennessee Valley Authority providing power to XAI, but TVA just finally has a quorum on its board, so it can't even vote to serve additional loads of any certain size until it had that quorum, because President Trump this spring fired board members, and I'm really confusing people here. But essentially, yeah, what we're looking at for power is XAI generating a lot of it itself through a natural gas plant that it is constructing in South Haven, Mississippi.
Okay, that would seem, from a power perspective, that would seem like, oh, good, so it won't be interfering or drawing from stuff that would otherwise go to other consumers. But from an air quality perspective, what are the implications with this natural gas power plant?
Yeah, so XAI, in its documents that's filed with the Mississippi Department of Environmental Quality, has committed to selective catalytic reduction, which is an emissions control technology that you put on these turbines that essentially reduces the smog-causing bad chemicals by quite a bit that these natural gas turbines would generate. It's not clear right now if on the temporary turbines that it has in South Haven, Mississippi, whether it's using this technology. There's also, and community members have raised this, and it's been reported by Mississippi Today, other folks, that there's real concern about the noise from these turbines from surrounding neighbors. When you have a power plant going, it's loud. Turbines don't run silently, right? And so that's a big part of this as well. And then, you know, something that everyone needs to keep in mind about what's happening in South Haven and what XAI is building there, there's already a natural gas plant there. TVA operates right next to XAI's South Haven data center and Memphis data center, at South Haven Combined Cycle Plant. So there's already a significant natural gas emitter right there in South Haven. So this isn't, and to your point, Jeff, those air molecules don't exactly respect state lines and are essentially on the state line. So, yeah, for everyone involved, there is now more pollution likely coming. How much more pollution? It's unclear until we really see the final specs on the permit.
All right. And then the other, it is interesting how this has worked, because obviously it's a big local story here, but this is one of the massive local, one of the massive national stories of 2025 has been these data centers, their construction, their impact on power bills, on water bills, et cetera, usage throughout the country. And we're just seeing it play out here. One of the things you did recently was you went back and looked at XAI's power bills. Story again at the Daily Memphian, people can read. What did you learn from that experience?
Yeah, what we learned is there are some things we don't know. What we did learn is that XAI, when it first was coming to Memphis, and this is incomplete and I'll explain in a minute, was projecting to use more than 1 million gallons of water a day. They quickly tempered those expectations. The company, you know, we reported very early on at the Daily Memphian, water recycling facility that would use wastewater from a Memphis right. wastewater treatment plant and do that. And they're currently building that. They're pulling permits. That construction's underway. You can go look at it if you really want to take a drive in Southwest Memphis. But what we've seen is through the MOCW bills, which are public, that XAI has not reached 1 million gallons of water a day like it was projected. It's peaked at about 380,000 gallons a day. And that was, I think, in August of this year. I don't have the data in front of me. I have I-40 in front of me. But what we learned after we published the story is my friends at Memphis Light Gas and Water gave me a call on Tuesday afternoon. We published the story, I guess Monday afternoon. We published the story Monday morning. hey, Sam, we didn't give you all the power bills. There are more power bills for XAI. And so I'm waiting, and I'm sure sometime today they will give them to me for more XAI power bills. And then we will actually see the entirety of the public scope of XAI's usage. And we will actually be able to see, I believe, the amount of natural gas they've burned, the company has burned over the past year, year and a half, which is probably the most significant impact environmentally on Memphis, is the amount of natural gas they've burned over the past year.
And then last question, because this is something people ask me from time to time. Do we have an answer to whether XAI's presence here has had any impact on a general consumer's power bill? Are my bills higher or lower or whatever because of XAI?
No, because XAI, to the point we've just been talking about these natural gas turbines, XAI at its first Memphis data center used natural gas turbines for the bulk of its power throughout most of 2024 and parts of 2025. And they've used some power from the Memphis Light Gas Water TVA grid. But most of it was behind the meter. Right now, a lot of the power they're using is from battery packs and natural gas turbines at its other Memphis data center. And so that's behind-the-meter power. That's stuff that XAI is generating on its own. Also, TVA, while it's passed rate increases before XAI, has not raised rates since XAI has got here. And MLG&W's rate hikes took place before XAI was even on the map. And we're much more focused on raising revenue for reliability and fixing those dilapidated pieces of infrastructure that are in the back of your property. Not your property, Jeff, but collectively people's property. And so, no, we haven't seen that effect yet. And one of the things I want to have people really keep in mind on that sort of narrative that's happening around the country is we've actually seen, at least in Memphis and elsewhere, and I've tried to read a lot of stories about this, not a tremendous amount of outcomes yet where, like, data center comes, power bill jumps. Okay, there's been a lot of concern about this. There's been a lot of hand-wringing. But in Memphis, it hasn't happened yet. And I've seen limited instances nationwide where it's happened. And I'm not saying that's an exhaustive reading of every clip that exists out there, because that's hard. But I would just say everyone to temper this, because also there's been a real lack of availability of power for some of these data centers on the grid that serves normal consumers. And so that's why you've seen XAI and other hyperscalers, which is what they're called in industry parlance, go behind the meter and rely on natural gas turbines, because there's just a lack of power elsewhere to serve them, or a lack of transmission lines to get the power to them. And so that's why you're seeing XAI operate the way it is, because they're trying to move as fast as they can, so they don't have time for the grid to catch up. It takes TVA
so the,
years.
So the impact is largely, the impact that is worrisome is not on bills and on power, it's more on the environmental impact, which is yet to be seen. But that's the one that we sort of have to keep a closer eye on as they generate all this with their natural gas turbines. Is that right?
That's right.
Sam, you're awfully good to join us, not just today as you come back, but all year long. Really appreciate it. Have a happy new year, and we'll talk to you again on the other side.
See you, Jeff. Happy
Thanks.
New year.
Sam Hardiman from the Daily Memphian. Read his stuff over there. Now, Jeffrey, normally we take a break after we talk to Sam, but I've gone right up to 10:51. How would you like to do this here?
We can take a break.
We'll take a break. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Did you hand me this 100 most watched telecasts of 2025?
I did, Jeff.
Is that from you?
That was indeed. Although I've been seeing conflicting reports. So that's from Variety. Because I saw another list that said this was from Austin Karp of the Sports Business Journal, that 92 of the top 100 telecasts were football. That one does not include, like, that one.
But I have a hard time believing. This one says 48 of the top 100 went to NFL
48
games.
I believe the top 50.
And is it also 48 of the top 50?
Yeah.
It goes to 55 if you include NFL-related
pre and post,
studio
yeah.
shows. Exactly. The Super Bowl, of course. That's number 126.7 million. There was a little, because there's no Olympics either in 2025.
Yeah.
Right, we'll have Olympics coming up.
Winter Games
coming up. The live shows, people watch live shows. That's what they watch. So the Oscars was the only non-sports telecast in the top 20. So there you go. The Saturday Night Live 50th anniversary special, that was there. Have you ever seen CBS's breakout hit Tracker?
No, but I do always see it promoted.
19 of the top 100 primetime telecasts.
Yes.
Tracker. Tracker, also Dancing with the Stars. Anyway, it's been a hell of a year. I hope you've had a good one. Jeffrey, what is coming up next on 92.9?
Jeff, here's what's coming next. The Rich Eisen Show will be coming up next, and then we will be live for Jeffrey Wright and Company. George and Connor will host the Gabe Kuhn Show today.
Have a great New Year's. We will be back in 2026 on Monday for a full week of shows. All the shows are back next Monday. Only us hardworking folks are here today. But we'll be back Monday to kick off the new year. We will talk to you then. For now, our work is done.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.